Blog Talk Radio.
Live from Washington, D.C., it's Quintessential Listening, Poetry Online Radio. QLPOR, as it's widely known, features a bevy of poets, spoken word artists, and live poetry readings with best-selling authors. Your host is Dr. Michael Anthony Ingram.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the program. The man that I plan to introduce is a superstar. I enjoy him so much. Well, hold on. I've got to find my notes. Hopefully, it's one of those days. Okay, here we go. I'll cut all of this out. Here we go. I got it. All right. In the realm of art, activism, and the written word, Mark Fishbein, the poet with the guitar, stands as a testament to the boundless creativity and unwavering dedication of a true artistic soul. Through journal articles, music, and his profound books we're going to talk about tonight, Mark has gifted the poetic world with thought-provoking insights and captivating melodies. His commitment to art, and poetry extends beyond his creations as he generously hosts weekly writers' workshops and spearheads the unique Zoom event, Planet Poetry 28. This monthly virtual magazine invites poets from all over the world to perform their work, immersing audiences in a transformative experience. For a glimpse into the captivating world of Mark Fishbein, I encourage you to visit his website, Poet with a Guitar. Prepare to be enthralled by the profound synergy of his words and his music as he invites a transformative journey through poetry. All right. Mark, what do you think?
Wow. Man, I'm not going to the moon.
All I needed was my notes.
Sure.
All right. Let's begin this poetic journey. Oh, I didn't say hello to you. How are you, Mark?
Oh, yeah, just doing great. Thank you. And thank you, Michael, for having me here.
All right. Fantastic. Mark, what is poetry?
You know, we were discussing before, and I think this would probably work, is that I have, like many of us, I have many, I'm a kaleidoscope of poems and themes. I've got 10 major, you know, themes that I'm working with, I guess, in life, and 15 minor themes. And one of them is writing poems about what is poetry. And somehow, and the process of writing poetry. And I thought for this particular venue, it might be a good idea, because
yes,
poets are listening to this, indeed, and people interested in poetry. And I thought I could read for some time just a variety of poems about this theme, and then from there, take the answer out of the poems and put it into our conversation. How does
Very
that
nice.
Sound?
It sounds fantastic. I want to ask you something else, though, before we move into your program. Why
sure.
is poetry important? Why is it important that we do this? Why? I need to know.
Huh. Well, poetry as an art form, you know, goes back to the ancient times. It's part of our psyches. We pick up with lullabies. And even if we're not attached to poetry, it's around us. And people respect it. You know, even if they don't read poetry, they don't know anything about poetry, you talk about poet, oh, it's like a philosopher or something, you know, something really cool that people do. And there's part of them, I think, that would like to be able to touch that universe, and hopefully one day they will. But it's important because it's a way, people sense it's a way of connecting with people. Even if they catch their poetry through only lyrics and songs, to them it's a poetry and they connect. So it's a way of sharing, which is very, very unique, using words as opposed to sound and or color, you know, or
yes.
painting. And because the words carry such weight, you know, in our minds, it becomes very important to our consciousnesses and our survival.
Yes, very nice. everyone listening, I give you Mark Fishbein.
Well, thank you. Well, in this particular idea of putting together a collection here of poems on poetry, I'll read the short introduction. In our modern tradition, if such a contradiction could exist, there happens something to be both modern and traditional, but we always say that. Writing about poetry is a theme, is up there with the major three, you know, themes of the last hundreds of years, death, unrequited love, quitted love, and spring. We poets just can't help ourselves. We alone do this as artists. We emerge the reader into our process of writing, what a poem is, what is poetry, and why it's important, and get ready for that M word, right, and what poetry means. It's a love-hate thing, but I have to ask, do people who are not poets get anything out of poems about writing poetry, or even describe what poetry is? Poems which do honor other poets, poets that describe the agony and ecstasy of writing, poems about missing muses and writer's block, really, what a bore. But we poets, oh, we love it. We grok as if it's strangers in a strange land, the land of being a poet and of the universe of poetry in our time. So I forgave myself and decided to put together this little collection of poems about poetry. Need to get my fix every couple of years. They kind of add up over the years. And so I'll ask your forgiveness, too, if you're not a poet. And if you are, hopefully you'll grok on what these poems are about. I'll start with a sonnet, a light sonnet called Sonnet to Self and Why Poetry with a Coda. Singers don't ask why they sing. Painters don't question their coloring. Dancers don't complain of pain. Composers don't make music from shame. But oh, the suffering we poets endure to craft a verse that is pure. How lonely is our chosen path, tormented souls who swoon with wrath. Madness and suicide is our fate, so why do I commiserate? Poets are the lowest paid, mostly buried in paupers' graves. No one cares about how we take to flight, so shut up about it and just write. And then a little coda. Good luck with that. Notes from the poetry workshop holiday party. The marshmallows are vegan. The sassafras is hydroponic. The mushrooms are sautéed in cannabis and sunflower oils. The short ribs are tofu, seasoned with lava salts. Please recycle your chopsticks. Lotus teas are served with honeycomb in cups modeled after ancient Mesopotamia. The poems are printed using a seaweed-based dye on elephant dung paper. Outside the window, two dogs have completed their smelling rituals and copulate freely. Put down the pen. The poetry begins. We are nobody, and this poem was prompted by something in the New York Times, a response to the editor in the Times when asked why there was no poetry among the hundreds of books in the summer reading list. He said, because nobody reads it. You, nobody, reading this poem. I feel badly you're not there. Occasionally, I imagine you doing the dishes or watching porn, a ghost with a joint or a bottle in hand, a suicidal snob quoting Petronius. All those books on your shelf are wanting in the rooms of Hugo's triggering town. If you're reading this poem, I pity you. You're practically 6 feet in the ground. And yet you read on, expecting something, something to take your invisible wings and make them flutter with sound. We can meet secretly at midnight, be lovers with groping tears. From one nobody to another, now is the time for our illicit affair. Poetry from the tree of despair. Again, you take a bite of the fruit from the tree of despair to be in that state of a drowning boat whose tiller palpitates in an ocean of grief, to be alone with yourself, desperate to share the depth of it, wanting in your heart the full dead weight of sadness. This taste is always the same as you imagine, as you spit out the seeds from an overripe pomegranate. It is a sensation with the complexity of rosehip wine and the bitterest herbs whose taste you like, but tell no one. Despair suits you. Milk it for all it's worth. Get high on it. You're addicted to the need to feel something, seeking the pulp that brews in you, passing the shelters of poverty and grit of those whose fate is endless tales of tragic repulsions. Don't deny that it's by the whip that creativity flows, this bleeding that urges you to your humanity. Should I read like three? Can I read like three or four more, Michael? I'll assume so. Okay.
Yes.
Sure. Well, here's a lighter poem at the poetry lecture. And then he said, and I'm sure he was serious, you only get to use two exclamation points for all your poetry. I looked it up. This symbol was painted on the caves 50,000 years ago, a warning sign to watch for mammoths. But there's none in Latin, nor Mandarin, nor the Bible. Leave it to a poet, Colucio Salutati, to introduce it in 1339. By the way, centuries before the question mark. I grew up on the old typewriters. You had to hit the apostrophe key, backtrack, hit the period key to make it, or vice versa. A real commitment. But now, by the number one on the computer keyboard, I have hundreds of them scattered around. Therefore, I have been serving several life sentences as a poetry high security penitentiary where I get to pace in the yard like a wild puma twice a day alone with a guard always watching me to be sure I can't find a way to kill myself. I keep asking, how can you write, let there be light, without an exclamation point? Oh, great one, who giveth us to name the universe, redeem me. As I rot away, my inquisitor has condemned me for writing in sin. I won't repent. My advice? Fuck 'em. Let there be light! Exclamation, exclamation, exclamation. Morning bath. I too dislike it, from that very famous line by Marion Moore about poetry. Every day, mid-morning, I take a hot bath and read poetry. Not a warm bath, mind you. Hot. No soap bubbles. Mostly modern anthologies of editors' choices from our great institutions, our academic Ars Poeticas. I flip through the pages. I hate this stuff. I rip them from their bindings, looking for one, just one, to invite me in that I actually know what the fucking poem is about. What the poem is about. I'm not aware yet what this poem is about. At last, I shampoo my hair, like Samson, as if the muses were courting their secret Delilahs. Why torture myself with these vague confessions, with words and images to haunt the life out of you? I even hate poems about hating poetry. But as soon as I get dry and sit by the fire, I get triggered to a rush of frenzy about changing seasons of coral reefs, the slavery of humanity's illusions, heaven and hell, and I remember a poem I once read which made my head spin, and God damn it, I start doing this again, trying to find the sweet spot between the being and the meaning. And I'll read perhaps two more.
All right, then.
Here's a recent one, actually. Affirmations to younger poets. As we'll discuss later, I'm a little older. I'm elderly, as they say now in post-COVID days. Once I told the world how to live and what to feel, I proclaimed to find the golden vein, nuggets the size of boulders. I just confirmed what I heard from Bibles or protest songs. You will find growing old It was mostly false gold, layered in cliche puppy loves, grief and pain from life's letdowns, or rages against the soul of power in the corrupt gods ruling paradise. Save it for the rock and roll. Do not preach in your poems from the soapbox of youth. This, my only preaching to you, in poetry, truth is metaphor, nothing more. And I will end with this. In the great poetry anthology, could it all be put in one song, one short ballad, to sing of the wilderness, of cities and their tears, the indescribable finality of infinite galaxies? Praise she who shared my bed. Praise the years as I played the fiddle like a dizzy bird of paradise. Before I wear on your patience, I ask only this. Do not judge me from these words alone. If this is all that remains of me in some anthology, I need to feel you empathize. I lived in bliss. I kissed the soil, ate the figs, flew like a bird.
Thank you. Incredible work. How would you describe your work, Mark?
I'm a fractured collage.
Okay.
I think collages. I mean, as per, you know, like Eliot first brought that out so well, you know, in Wasteland and all that, is that today we're collages, and I never know what's going to come from a poem when I start to write it. I think Robert Frost said that as well. You know, you sit down to write a poem and something else comes from it. But I have so many different directions that I take, and each one is real. You know, each one seems sincere. It just seems like a part of me. It's a schizophrenia, I guess, that poets naturally have, or I suppose composers too. You know, how do these people make these wonderful sounds? That how does Mahler make a symphony? You know, like, wow, a different form.
What do you write about? What are some of your predominant themes?
The predominant things. Let's see. I'm writing a lot of baby boomer poems and poems about aging.
Mm-hmm.
I have a lot of ekphrastic work that I do. I have a collection that I've published on paintings, but I also did one on monuments. And right now I'm working on billboards and wall graffiti in Chicago. I do a lot of poems about music, poems about nature, sonnets. I write a lot of metaphysical poems. I have a collection called The Here Above, The Now Below. I also do translations. I have a book of Paul Eluard that I've just translated. I'm trying to get published. And in smaller collections, I have poems about astronomy or disco or God and Ukraine poems and
right.
Venus and social, and it goes on and travel and stuff. And I also did the Trumpiest book, which was a political type of book, although I tried to create poetry as opposed to being any type of propaganda and stuff like that, to try to find metaphor and something other poetic within those 4 years. So it's a kaleidoscope, you know.
Well, before we focus on the book, please share with me an early experience where you learned that poetry had power.
I think the earliest for me was I was about 15 or 6, maybe 16, 17 years old, and I was in Washington's. I was in Central Park for a bee-in. That was the early hippie stuff going on back then. And I saw Allen Ginsberg read a poem to a whole crowd of stoned out young hippies there. And that's the first time the magic kind of got to me, I think.
Wow.
That's a long time ago.
You know,
1967, 1968. I was like a junior in high school or something. You know?
Now, the selection process, how many poems did you choose from, you know, to put your book together? How did you
which
decide
one,
which
the,
poets you used? The Atticus.
The Trumpius book?
Yes, Trump, yes.
Oh, the Trumpius book was an unusual, was for me a first one of, I mean, shortly after the election, when he won, I just started finding myself writing a poem every couple of weeks just about what was going on and all that, and finding different types of, venting, but not really, not only venting, trying to put it in a historical and poetical thing. And I found after the months were going on that it was becoming a collection. So I decided to continue it and tried to get at least one poem a month in over those 4-year periods of either something specifically that happened that could be spoken about, you know, like Melania, you know, walking out to, with her coach saying, you know, I don't care to you and all that, little stuff like that, as well as the overriding, you know, what was going on in America, what was going on racially, what was going on in America in every other way. And it, and then of course COVID came, and then after COVID came all the rest of the craziness. So it ended up to be about 50 or 60 poems. Just each one almost like, I guess it's today's world, they might call it a chapbook type style, because it is dated. And what I try to do is to try to revise each poem each month so that I wouldn't have to come back to it to revise it again. Try to keep the integrity of what I really felt at that time in history when COVID happened, when Trump was saying this or saying that and all the rest of the stuff that was going on. And so that was the nature of that book. It's a historical document to remind me what the sentiment the emotion that was going on during those 4 years and a little bit afterwards.
Yeah, so much happened. It's almost surreal what happened those years. But I'm wondering, do you view yourself as more of a storyteller or wordsmith?
Wordsmith. I do occasionally do narrative poems when I'm lucky enough to have a fresh narrative. But as Paul Valéry said, I think, and it stuck with me once, that the difference between prose and poetry is that prose has direction. It goes from A to B. You know, it usually goes, you know, has a narrative it's telling, whereas poetry dances in place. And so it's a different mindset. And I so respect those few novelists that are also double as amazing poets. I mean, it's such a hard to do both. And so I've tried prose and I've tried narrative, and it just doesn't suit me. I'm forcing it. I'm dancing in place. I can't go from A to B.
You know, as we think about poems, how does a poem know where to go? Do you lead, or does the poem lead?
Wow. How? Well, there's two things that happen in the process of writing a poem, I suppose. One is that the initial of just free association of a theme that might hit you, and which you have a certain meaning comes through either by intent or, you know, just by coincidence, that you realize, yeah, that's what I really want to feel. That's what I've been feeling. I haven't been able to figure it out. And then comes the revision. And then comes the revision process. And like many poets, I revise a lot. It's like it's a never-ending process for me. I did some workshops on revision and did a lot of research, and there's a lot of poets talk about revision and their work. It's a big subject amongst us. And
yes,
I just find myself doing 30 or 40 revisions on a poem easily, you know, as it worked out, every word, every touch. Sure.
Usually I ask a question about editing, but you shared your view on it. I'm wondering, your book, this particular one, Trumpius, is about emotion, right? Emotion is in it.
It's also about the philosophy of history, sociological things going on and all the rest. But emotion is there in the surrealist, you know, mindset that we all were in at the time.
Knowing what you know about the world, your lived experience, does it hurt you to write poetry? If not, why not?
Oh. Oh, it's no, it doesn't. No, no. I think it does. No, it doesn't hurt me. That's an interesting question, Michael. Would be. It requires some a little introspection. I had a after I retired from what I did. A little about my life, real quickly, is you know I graduated from CCNY with a degree in literature. Went to Paris to go get a master's degree, a maîtrise. Took me a year or two to get to the language. Then I was in the school, and the school shut down while I was in the middle of my master's program because of student riots that were happening back then in the early 70s. And when they reopened the school, they were asking foreign students to have to spend another year, year and a half getting equivalent courses, and I couldn't handle it financially or any other way. So I came back to New York. I actually became a musician for a couple of months, joined the music union and played around. And then I got into some kind of an industry in screen printing. I was one of the earliest guys who was screen printing T-shirts and, you know, all that in the mid-70s. And so it was the right place at the right time, and I found a nice business, and I'm printing Mickey Mouse on T-shirts till the cows come home. They can't get enough of it, and I'm one of the few guys in the country that know how to do this. So I had a 40-year run in the screen printing business, but I came back to poetry afterwards.
Wow.
Which I am at now. It's like the springtime of poetry in the autumn of my life, as it were. I wanted to get back to the pain. So as soon as I got out of retired, I went into poetry therapy. I went into bibliotherapy.
Okay.
I think it'd be
okay.
A wonderful way to, you know, to give back. And bibliotherapy, I worked with a group in Seattle called the Pongo Group, which was basically there to prompt teens and trauma in institutions and who had been abused and all the rest to get them to write poetry. And I did this for a couple of years, and I worked very closely with bibliotherapists, but I'm not a therapist, so I had to work with as a facilitator. So I got to understand poetry as healing, you know, and indeed. And I found that's a very, very intense purpose of poetry today, especially in the COVID period. People were bleeding, and so they used poetry as healing. And in that respect, you know, poetry is, it releases the, you know, all of that pain and aloneness. So it hurts to write, but it's a beautiful pain because that giving out and that bleeding onto the word and finding through metaphor some type of a truth is like none other. So. It's kind of a duplicitous answer. Yeah.
Let me get in there. Please let me.
Come on. You got it, man.
So then you're saying, this is the question. Is a poem letting your guard down or building a wall?
Well, I should certainly think it's letting you, in that respect, I think it's letting your guard down. I don't think you want to build a wall and create a barrier between yourself and the reader. I think that's, in a sense, one of the problems of modern poetry is that a lot of poets hide behind the poem, and it's okay. My intent of this poem was to say this, and everybody else interpreted it like that, but that's okay. At least they got something from the poem. Mm-hmm. And my answer to that is no. You're writing with an intent. If you're writing about your girlfriend and somebody thinks you're writing about your dog, I don't think it's a successful poem. So in that respect, no. Yeah, I think it's important to not hide behind the poem.
You know, I was going to share with you that I taught some classes at Oregon State University in play therapy. And it's a different paradigm, but it's growing more popular every day. So what are you trying to communicate with your art?
Well, the first thing is that you called it my art. And that's, I think, a very big compliment. And that's what I think it is.
All right.
It's an art. I mean, so I'm trying to communicate the same way other art does, even though we're using words. But it's to create a universe of imagination. That shares something intimate, something universal, and something timeless, something magical.
Let's flesh that out. What does being creative mean to you? I really want to know. This is fascinating.
Huh. Well, a good maxim is that creativity comes as a result of disconnected realities, right? Or contradictory realities is what it is. So, you know, because and all of the realities we have, good realities, have contradictions in them. And when you explore those contradictions, creativity comes out somehow.
Wow, very nice, very nice. You know, when we write, I know when I write, there's some doubt that poetry can do what I want it to do. So for you, where does your poetic doubt begin and where does it end? You've been writing for a long time.
Yeah. Well, I guess the doubt comes in more on the larger scale of what does it mean to be a success as a poet? Mm-hmm. You know, what is it we're looking to do? Do we all want to be Shakespeare or Milton or mm-hmm. some Tennant in that? Which is highly unlikely, of course. Maybe one a century, if that many. I mean, and due to the current public recognition of poetry, in which if you ask most people in America to name a living poet, they'll tell you Edgar Allan Poe. Right?
Mm-hmm.
So, unfortunately. True. So, you know, part of it is that, you know, the purpose of what I'm doing is to such a small community.
Mm-hmm.
And so mm-hmm. That makes me, you know, in a sense, I mean, yes, but and then I put on the other shoe saying that it might be a small, oops, I'm mm-hmm. sorry, it might be a small connection. Oh, television alarm went off. I'm sorry, I just lost my train of thought. I shut that off.
That's all right. I lose mine all the time.
That happens when you're over 70, yeah.
And 60. Okay.
But did that make sense what I just said then?
It did. It really did. Yeah. And it made me wonder if there was another era that you could have lived in, which one would it have been?
Oh, that's easy. Yeah, 1850 to 1929, 1930.
Right. Perfect. What happened? Talk to me.
Oh, wow. Well, that was just at the beginning of the Industrial Revolution. Everything was new and everything was creative. The world was all of a sudden got pushed into first gear with the spread of the Industrial Revolution and all of discovery that was happening at an accelerated pace, but it was still, the world was still naive enough to have its natural beauty. And then mm-hmm. Paul Gauguin was possible, you know,
okay.
It's just no longer possible. And and things like that. It was a great time of creativity and music in art, you know, from the Impressionists through the Symbolists through all the rest of the stuff that came through until the early 20s in literature and music. It was just a bombastic time filled with World War One, a lot of other bad stuff. But, you know, time to me was a great time.
Well, why are poets different from other people? How are they different?
I think if they're true poets, they're
over here. Talk to me.
Yeah. If I had to answer that, I would say, True poets to me have a different level of compassion because they understand the grief. There's a certain grief and sorrow just in living, you know, just as a result
yes.
of, you know, the and all that. And they and of all the stuff that happens in life, besides all the joy that happens in life, I think mm-hmm. that because of the metaphor of that imaginary universe has opened them up to a larger passion. A
now,
larger
what
passion
about you?
to share grief and or joy.
What makes you different? This is the micro question from other poets.
Huh.
Well, you share
well,
if you want to communicate with the
art.
Sure.
So yeah, I mean, mm-hmm. I do think I have a variety of voices,
mm-hmm.
and in each particular voice, I just try to be, you know, that Ziggy Marley song, got to be true to yourself. I just try as much not to avoid cliche and to put my own personal stamp on what I write as much as I can.
All right. I didn't ask you whether you come from a literary background or not. And what did you learn about writing growing up?
Yeah, no, I did not, actually. Although my dad was just barely graduated high school. My folks were kids of immigrants that came here early part of the century and grew up very lower class in Brooklyn at the time. And but my dad picked up from his father also love of music, of classical music. And he blasted that stuff all throughout my life. And then he became a bit of a beatnik He became a bit of a beatnik, as it were. So I had to do something artistic to emulate. But my parents were not at all. My parents were not literary at all. My mom didn't read very much at all. And dad didn't read too much.
So how did he take over you?
I don't know. I think after by the second year in college, I just remember going up and down up to City College with books of poetry, and just it just hit me. I was immersed. By then, I was reading a lot of Alvin Fineman, and a lot of the beat poets had really spoke to me and kind of liberated me from that that black and white 50s sitcom that we used to watch, the kind of nonsense from the 50s all of the propaganda stuff of how to live.
what color is poetry?
Huh? As your AZURE.
That's why they paid me the big bucks, man. You know, that's why they paid me the big bucks.
Yeah, that belongs to that kind of belongs to Baudelaire, but you can use it.
You can tackle it. You can handle it. You are the man with the guitar, remember?
Yeah.
What color is it?
Yeah, I do. I think of a color,
and I'll think of a color. What color is it?
What color do you think poetry is?
No, you can't do it like that. You're the guest. The guest.
I think azure blue is if I had to look for a color. I mean, that's just one of my favorites. So.
Okay. I'm thinking an off brown, not real brown, but just there's a tinge of light, a beautiful, beautiful stone.
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe that's where I am today.
That's in the fourth rung of the Paradiso. The seventh rung is as azure, you see. Going back to Dante, right?
Yeah. What do you think your work conveys about the human condition?
I think that's an interesting question, my lord. I think the complexity, the paradox of it being both the complexity of everything and the absolute simpleness of everything at the same time. It's kind of yin and yang that kind of coexist. And that to me is that's what makes it sane, I suppose. Huh. Interesting question.
Well, you know, man, there's so much happening in this world. There's the good, the bad, the ugly, as well as the indifferent.
Yeah.
Tough world sometimes. What do you view as being the role of a poet in modern day society?
Well, as we all know that famous quote from Auden, that in a poetry makes nothing happen. But it's not really true. I think as poetry changes and takes on new forms such as hip hop and rap. I mean, they're legitimate forms of poetry by all means. And they have transformed the world. No matter where I go in the world, you hear it. And mm-hmm. it has transformed the way this generation sees poetry, sees words, and to some extent, you know, sees truth. Mm-hmm. And so I think in that respect, your poetry can change. I think Auden is not necessarily right. Poetry can change things in its own little subtle way.
Mm-hmm. I know that's a heavy question. Very heavy.
Yeah.
You know, they say
the poetry of the Vietnam War certainly changed mm-hmm. the way I felt about the Vietnam War back then. There was a lot of anti-war poetry going on,
mm-hmm.
and that certainly affected me very much, and you know, helped turn me around, and you know, and all that. And I was very engaged in the anti-war movement back in the mm-hmm. you know, the 60s. Yeah.
Yeah, I commend you for that, because a lot of people didn't participate. But you know, they say
yeah.
that the world with complete honesty, to see the world with complete honesty, one should look to comedians, musicians, artists, and poets. What do you think emerges naturally from real work? What emerges from you, Mark?
You know, I followed for many years, and I still have tremendous reverence for Krishnamurti. Jiva Krishnamurti as the philosopher.
Mm-hmm. All right.
And Krishnamurti, you know, kind of taught me in a way how to feel that question you just asked,
mm-hmm.
In which, you know, as a person, we exist for relationship. I mean, that's the purpose of our being is relationship. We can't exist in a cave and a fakir, you know, and, you know, meditating on a mountain. And so it's all about that sharing, that moment when it works.
Mm-hmm.
Let me get the question again and relate this to it, because that just came to mind. Let me answer your question better. Yeah.
What if it doesn't work in terms of the relationship? How does poetry fit into that?
In a relationship with people, I mean,
you said relationships.
I meant relationships. I didn't mean necessarily relationships of romantic relationships.
Oh, okay.
At all. I mean just the fact that we share. You and I are having this relationship mm-hmm. right now.
Yes.
There's relationship in that, and that's that relationship is the golden vein for. You know, for poets, you know, to catch that moment of communion when you know that you're reaching somebody, you know, in a poem mm-hmm. in such a way that cannot be done any other way.
Wow.
It has a magical moment.
Does knowing that your poems are published, and you published 5 books, and out there in the world, validate your being a poet, or are you content knowing mm-hmm. they're out of your system?
No, I mean, publishing for me is an issue. In as much as there are no bookstores anymore.
Yes.
I live in Chicago. There are like 10 bookstores, and only 3 of them have a poetry section, and they're not even that good. There's one good poetry bookstore in the city of 3-4 million people. Mm-hmm. And there used to be, like in Paris, you know, there was a bookstore every other block, or in New York when I grew up, there was, you know, hundreds of independent bookstores. That's where you went to hang out, the bookstore. Mm-hmm. So part of the problem of publishing is that, you know, there's now, you know, there's so much publishing going on and so little access to find the book, to go into a bookstore and to look at it and all that. And then, you know, all these journals and anthologies that we all publish and we all get in and get our names as we publish in this anthology, who reads them? Sometimes I feel that in being in a Zoom meeting, in a Zoom open mic, and reading mm-hmm. to a crowd of 20 people, if I'm getting to 4 or 5 people, that's where poetry lives. That's and if I can go into a room and read in front of people and find that I made that connection, that's where poetry really truly lives for me right now. Whether or not the, you know, yeah, we'd like to think that the, you know, somehow we'd become, you know, Ocean Vuong and all the rest, and that's wonderful for Ocean Vuong, but you know, America doesn't have room to know, you know, more than 1 or 2 poets in a given generation, wow. You know. So it's just what
there,
it is.
There
we
are
do
people
it, we do
out
it for
there.
The love.
There are people out there who view or think that poetry is is dying. How would you counter that? Because as I listen to you, poetry is a vibrant thing, a beautiful thing, something that can live on. So talk to me, please.
Oh, sure. Well, that to me is the whole rap and hip hop generation.
Okay.
And stage poetry. You know, there will be right now. I mean, that we look at two types of poetry: stage poetry and page poetry, and all that. And there are voices coming in that are doing both, that are both, you know, that are able to both be well performed poets in the modern form of performance, and these amazing videos that the generations are making with the poems, with the video, with the audio, with the visuals, and all this stuff is just spectacular with the words. But at the same time, there are artists out there that I find from time to time that transcend and are able to, just like there are certain lyricists like Dylan that transcend good song and music with poetry. They become poetry on their own. And so I think poetry does live on. It's changing. And as it always changes, the past generation, you know, some parts of it will always, you know, just put their nose on it and all the rest. But no, I look at that as, thank God that somebody's came and saved poetry, because the Beats ended up coming to save poetry in the 50s, and this is just another variation, right? So,
I like that. In terms of the book, I'd like you to share with us the titles of five poems, just any five poems.
The title?
Yes.
Oh.
If you title okay. it.
Sure. Well, from part one, let's see. Trumpiest trash. let's see.
I'm sorry.
That's right.
The whole shouldn't last.
Say it again. Cape May Afternoon, which is an interesting poem. Trumpiest ways to stay safe from the virus.
Okay.
a father at the acquitting of a cop killing. Gotta Damaraming the USA.
You don't play around. So for you, what role does the title play in your work?
These are basically reflections, and the idea of this emperor, this character, this Roman emperor, this Caligula that we got here, it just kind of makes. I try to put it into perspective. There's a lot of references in a lot of the poems to ancient Rome. To Marcus Aurelius, who was also the emperor, great emperor, probably the best ever, who was the emperor during the pandemic in Rome in the second century, and I refer to the Satyricon and Petronius a lot. As the poet, I refer to myself as, you know, Eumolpus, the poet character in the Satyricon by Petronius, because these are times very much like Roman times. I mean, the mob and all the rest going on, and I use that as a, you know, metaphorically. So that was Trump, the idea of just calling him Trumpius, like that kind of fit the hair.
Well, are you hoping this book will resonate with a broad range of readers, or are you targeting a specific audience?
No, this book in particular, I thought of all the books that I have out, this was towards a general reader. There are some poems in here which are a little bit more academic and would require, you know, a certain academic approach, but the majority of the poems are accessible without being over cliche or overly sing-songy and all that. And the emotion in a lot of the poems is there. It's an accessible book. So I was thinking that, well, after the election, I thought, well, this would be great. Give it a year or two, and let everybody get over this guy, and then this book may have some, you know, actually be a way for me to make a larger entry into the American poetry scene. Because if this book were to be a success and go viral, as a statement of these times, and there's a lot of good poems in here, I think, then maybe I get publishers interested in me, and I could, you know, actually, you know, publish the other tenets of my work, because I don't think the larger public doesn't have a very large appetite, you know, for another poem talking about death and grief and all the rest of the stuff that we approach and all
that. I sense when I listen to you talk like that, I sense frustration.
Well, to some extent, I think all of us poets have a certain amount of frustration about being poets. Recently reading the works of Juvenal, the satirist in Roman times, pretty much the same. Not much has changed in that respect.
Well, well, let me ask this. Has your idea of what poetry is and what poetry can do changed since you began writing poetry? Because you've been writing for a long time. Talk to me.
Yeah, I know. I know that I've influenced through my workshop and through they used to do the workshop live in D.C. before COVID, and then afterwards went online. And I know that I've inspired a lot of people to write. And I also give lectures on poetry. I gave a couple at East West University here in Chicago and everything, which I just go into the room and just talk about poetry to them and read a couple of poems and just. And all that. And this is mostly exchange students and everything. And the response I get is that I never realized that I could enjoy poetry. And of course you can, you know. So that's why I want to teach it. You know, that's why right now I mentioned I'm going back to college. I never got my master's degree from the Sorbonne, and then I got involved in life. And so here I am. Yeah. I just kind of retired from being a screen printer. And after I was a screen printer, I was a screen print consultant. I went around the world for 20 years, went to all the countries and taught everybody how to screen print. And now I'm retired and all that. And, okay, what am I going to do with this poetry? I want to teach. I want to teach young people. And in order to teach, you need a master's degree. It's just like, in order to be a dentist, or to be a lawyer, you need to pass the bar. So I'm going for the master's, and I'll be like 75 when I go and try to teach and open up to teach again. And good, you know. And so hopefully I'll make some larger influence in people's lives for 10 years to come and take it from there. So that's my goal is to connect. Yeah.
Well, if someone was there to purchase your book, what advice would you give them about reading that particular book before they buy?
Oh, and this one is just to keep an open mind, and that each, as it says in the introduction, that each poem was written in real time. And that this was how we felt. And some of the emotions that I felt did not come to pass. Some of the fears that I had, we did not have World War III, you know, and all that.
Yes.
And some of the other things that I feared came out to be worse. But whatever it may be, I would just tell them to keep an open mind and try to feel this book in historical way of how it felt different than it feels today. Unfortunately, that can't be yet, because today it feels the same as it did then. But hope.
You know, we've almost reached the end of our poetry.
We can't get rid of this guy. Yeah.
He's got a few more questions, then you can go.
Sure. I love hearing you laugh, Michael. It's great.
Writers and poets write for a myriad of reasons. Some write primarily to speak a message to an audience. Others write because staying silent is not an option. Mark, why do you write?
Yeah, I'm more on the T.S. Eliot side of that. I'm writing for that person who I'm writing to is a larger audience outside
larger
myself.
Audience.
I'm writing for myself, but it is a larger audience. Yeah.
But do you
rather than to just write for myself in a that to me is a, again, we need relationship. We write to share. I really feel that we write to share, and it's something I encourage people to do. You know, it doesn't matter what level you're writing on. Share your work.
Wow,
you know,
so nice.
And get it out there. Yeah.
I've got to ask before we go. Do you think you were meant to be a poet?
Yeah, I don't have any religion, really, so I think I needed this. My dad especially was not at all religious, even though his parents were and the generations before them. And for me, it's a spiritual journey, and I needed something, and I needed a spiritual journey, and this was it for me. It wasn't, it wasn't the religious way. So maybe they're one and the same.
So what surprises you? So what surprises you most about being a poet? What surprises you, my friend?
Oh, I suppose that's such an interesting question. Wow. What surprises me most about being a poet? It's just
I guess
it's when every once in a while
mm-hmm.
I read my work and I actually like it. It doesn't happen that often, but when it does, it fills me with great joy. So that's the only way I can put it.
I love that. Would you favor us with one more? Do you have just one more you can share?
One poem.
Mm-hmm. To bring everything full circle. Bring everything full circle.
Okay, sure. Let me look it up right here. Let me see. Fate. Let me look up fate. Okay. 20 poems. I'm sorry. I'm just having I didn't hear you ask that, so I'm just looking for it here and take a second, okay?
Yeah.
I'm
straight. Well, I just thought
I'll just take it from the book rather than look around. Take it from the book Kaleidoscope Poetry, which which is part of the collection of the Poetry Global Network that I'm associated with, which is quite a whole other story. Here, to you, reader, we have just met. We are in a black room with this poem. All doors are closed. There are no windows or cracks. It is, in a way, like a coffin. We are comfortable. Our bodies are dressed in soft cloth, and we are neither hungry nor thirsty, tired or bored. You do not know if I am from north or south. You do not even know the century I am living in, or if this is written in a native tongue when translated to yours. You do not know if I am male or female, young or old, my race or what gods my people invent. Now a lamplight is shadowless on this page like a star among a billion galaxies that by chance or fate is our sun. So on this plentiful planet where time matters, we can begin to communicate in this dead silent space. I will offer my poems and only beg of you to tell me who I am.
Wow. So if poetry was banned tomorrow, what would you do instead, my friend, to express yourself? Because to me, you're like a genie in a jar that wants to come out of the like you have
well,
to.
Well, that's such a hypothetical question that scares the hell out of me. But I suppose I always do have music. I've been playing classical music now and jazz and samba and a variety of other styles for well over 50 years. And
wow.
I'm one of the many, many thousands of wonderfully talented guitarists you can watch on YouTube. It seems like never ending. In this world of 8 billion people, there must be a million great guitarists. And so I'm a good guitarist. I'm a fine guitarist, but I'm not Juilliard level or anything like that. So
We never talked about the relationship between music and poetry. Got anything quick?
Yeah. Yeah, only very quickly is that, and I wrote songs when I was in college and all that, but then I got right into the poetry, and I've always found them disconnected. When I read, okay. when I give a reading, when I do a reading, I very often play a little piece, half a minute, you know, before the poem to set up the poem, and I play in a variety of different styles.
Yes.
But I don't, and that's the only way I find my music is connected to my poetry. When I play music, the goal for me is to stop thinking words, get away from words. The only thing that gets the words out of my head, these damn words, they don't stop these sentences, you know, and music stops that for me. And so in that respect, that's why I love it. And for poetry, well, it's the exact opposite. It's to find the music in words, you know.
Where can we buy the book?
Oh, it's on Amazon and in a couple of bookstores. It's available through Ingram. But it's also on Amazon. Just look under Reflections of the Time of Trumpius Maximus. You see it right there.
Right. Where do you go from here? What's next for you creatively?
For me next, well, I'm involved very much with Poetry Global Network on the board. We do workshops and all kinds of other stuff monthly. So we're all going to be performing at the Singapore Poetry Festival at the end of the month and a variety of other places. I do hybrid events. I like that. That keeps me very busy. And I also do workshops and invite people to do workshops on different subjects and different poets. And it's been working out very nicely. And going back to school, it's going to take 2 years. While I'm there, I've already requested to be editor of the school journal, which I think should work out. And I keep myself certainly busy with that. And ultimately, maybe try to publish a little bit, you know, in the next couple of years as well. Finally, I'm getting older, you know.
Last thing, we never really talked about Planet Poetry 28. What does that mean?
Yeah, what's different is I realized on Zoom early on that by using the share screen, by putting your poem on the screen and then scrolling down and reading it, it's a tremendous advantage. That you could see, you know, it's very hard. Most poets don't read that well. I'm not sure I read that well.
Nice voice.
Well, it's difficult. I mean, I've been trying very hard for the last couple of years to get my reading a little bit out of poetry voice and a little bit more, you know, to be heard and to be enjoyed. But when you see the poem and the craft that went into it with the poet reading in their words, their poem, you get distracted for a second. You can find yourself your way back into the poem. You can appreciate the craft that went into this particular piece. So Planet Poetry 28 is only for share filing. Everybody that goes there reads as many, they're invited poets and open mic poets, but you have to share your poem so we can see it as you're reading it. And it's a very unique event, and it brings on a very mature and sophisticated crowd, because to do so, you have to be somewhat of a dedicated poet. You're going to let your work be seen in that respect. And I get a wonderful response, I have a global community that comes in and joins us on the 28th day of every month. At a different times for different time zones. I sometimes put it in morning, sometimes afternoon. Because through the Poetry Global Network, I have a huge connection with poets from all the continents. And it's to me, it's a love. It's on its third year right now. You can see any of them on YouTube. Just go Planet Poetry 28 YouTube, and you know you'll see that's 30 or 40 of them there. You know, so they're broadcasting put there.
This is a great place.
Doing, I guess.
This is a great place to end.
I've enjoyed it so much. I love your laugh. I mean, I'm so happy I was able to get some joy out of you like that. It's great.
I enjoyed listening to you because I learned so much. You're a remarkable man.
Well, you are too for doing this. You are too for doing this. I realize how hard it is to do it to help. The dedication you do to be doing this as long and as well as you do. So here's a hats off to you, Michael.
Yeah. I don't hear a lot of accolades, get a lot of accolades. So thank you. Thank you very much.
You bet. And thank you, Michael. It's been wonderful talking.
Share with us the title of the book again.
Yes. It's Reflections in the Time of Trumpius Maximus, T-R-U-M-P-I-U-S, Trumpius, Maximus.
And the cover is extremely striking. All right.
Okay. Yeah, Atmosphere Press put in a good one, yeah.
We've made it through another.
There you go. Good for you, Michael.
This was a fool.
Okay. And I'll be listening in. I'll be looking forward to your future podcast, listening in.
All right. There was no fluff here tonight. This is the real deal. All right.
You got it.
As I share with you every time we're together, let poetry ring somewhere throughout the land. Good night, everybody. Thank you.
Good night. You bet.
Here's some music.
Hello?
Yeah. Okay. Hold on.
Should I just hang up?
Yes, this is it.
Okay, you got it. Take care. Bye-bye.
All right.